Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well out there. We'll have Titans wide receiver Josh Malone calling in at 7:15. Looking forward to that conversation. TD coming up at 8 o'clock. Teron Davenport and Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball at 9:30. Looking ahead to some regional play that begins today in the NCAA tournament. And Joe, with that in mind, Tennessee, the number one overall seed in the tournament. Heavy expectations on the Vols heading into this year. Now, if you're a Tennessee fan, this is a new experience for you heading into the NCAA baseball tournament as the number one overall seed. If you're a college baseball fan around here, not necessarily a new thing. This has happened here before, of course, with Vanderbilt. And I said this earlier in the week. The one Vanderbilt team that I keep going back to that I was sure that they were going to win a national championship, probably as sure as I am now that Tennessee is going to win a national championship in baseball, and that was that David Price team in 07. Like, I watched them play a lot in person that year. They were so much fun to watch. They were so good, and the pitching they had was just incredible. Price was on that team. I think Mike Minor was on that team. I mean, it was just lethal what they had. And then all of a sudden, regional weekend comes and goes, and Michigan advances, and Vanderbilt is left twiddling their thumbs at home. So ever since then, like, you, there is always the kind of that thought in the back of your mind, at least for me anyway, of, man, a lot of things seem like they're going to go a certain way in postseason sports in general, but college baseball for sure. And sometimes it doesn't quite work out that way. How worried are you about that if you're a Tennessee fan as postseason play begins today?
This may surprise you, but I wrote about this at theathletic.com today. I feel like I haven't been, self-promoting enough lately. Maybe I just haven't been working enough lately. But
ask Garski.
Well, that's right. Garski would tell you that's absolutely true. So, but I embarked on, and this is actually Mitch Light, my editor, his idea, as usual, but the idea of Tennessee handling being a favorite, so let's talk to Vanderbilt fans, Vanderbilt teams that didn't. So there's two Vanderbilt teams. You're that one that you mentioned. That's actually the only number one seed Corbin has had, 2007.
Yep.
David Price, like you said, I mean, they were loaded. Alvarez, Flaherty, I mean, they were loaded. But in 2013, they were the two seed, but they were, that was the team that went 26-3 in the SEC, absolutely loaded. I mean, Buehler and Fulmer and Danzy Swanson were all freshmen, but they were just loaded. They were basically, both those teams were unstoppable and largely considered the favorites. So they both lost. So is there a lesson there? Is there something Tennessee can take from that? I mean, basically what I came away with is, one, like, you just, if you're a Tennessee fan, you have to embrace and understand, like, it's baseball and it's just different. It is. I mean, this is the craziest thing to me. 22 tournaments since they expanded to 64 teams. When they expanded, they started the seeding. They started the national seeding, eight yep. national seeds. The one seed has won one time, the first year, 1999, Miami Hurricanes.
It's incredible.
They have never won again. So, if you go by the math since this happened, you are eight times more likely to not make Omaha than you are to win this thing if you're a one seed. I mean, it makes no sense to me. Now, some years, the one seed and, like, the four seed aren't that different, right? Like, so, some years, just like, you just happen to be the one seed. Okay, that's fine. But some years, you are clearly the one seed. So I talked to Travis Jewett, who was Corbin's assistant coach in 13. He actually was most recently Tulane's head coach. Also, he was an assistant coach in the 2010 Arizona State team, and his, which was 47-8, the clear number one seed, the absolute favorite to win it all, best team ever, talk, all that stuff, like some parallels to this year. And that team did get to Omaha, then boom, boom, Clemson, South Carolina, you're done. 0-2, you're out of there. His thing was, the thing he thinks of with this Tennessee team and what he thinks of with the 13 Vanderbilt team and the 2010 Arizona State team is, those two teams, they didn't lose. So he's like, so when you get punched in this situation, all of a sudden, like, how do you handle it? And that would be the concern. Now, the argument I would say back to that, though, and I wrote this too, is, like, the Vols got some of the postseason handling being a favorite out of the way last year. A lot of these guys were there, Wright State.
Yeah.
Also, they were there in Omaha. They didn't play well. They lost two games, but they've had experiences before this year. But this year, when it's such a just a fantasy ride, that is where you get a little bit worried. When it's just like you're just so overwhelming in the regular season, because it is different. Pitching matchups, your strengths, postseason baseball is different. You know, as you talked about last segment, like you've got to figure out how you're going to arrange things for different situations. If you get to the Supers, it's just best two out of three. But then I look at Tennessee, and it's just like, but they have pitcher after pitcher after pitcher they can use. That's where, like, their pitching depth should be great for them. You never know. I still do subscribe to the baseball, you know, philosophy, good pitching beats good hitting. So you run into a great ace here or there, you might be in trouble in a super. You might be all of a sudden down 1-0 in a super, and then can you handle that pressure? But, I mean, I think they're built for it. It's also just bizarre to me that the one seed has won this thing one time.
The biggest question that I have, and I agree with, you know, the pitching for Tennessee should be a big strength for them. But the biggest question I have is, when things maybe get a little hairy, when there's some pressure, can guys like Dolander and Beam handle that? They're both freshmen. They've been outstanding this year. Things have gone really well for them in their freshman year. Now, maybe they just continue to roll right along, and it is what it's been all year long. Now, as Wes pointed out last week, Wes Rucker, it hadn't quite been as smooth for them lately as it has been to start the season, and you expect that to a certain degree, but there's a different type of pressure that comes with it once you get into postseason play, and I wonder, for young guys like that who have not been through this experience before, like Dolander and Beam, how do they handle that? I think that is, if I had to identify one question mark I have about this Tennessee team, that's it, heading into this postseason play.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they're young. You've got you got Chase Burns too. So you've got you've got an incredible. I mean, the future, by the way, when you have Burns as a freshman and Beam as a freshman.
Yeah. Dolander's a sophomore.
Dolander's a sophomore. But, I mean, super, it's overall young. And, again, I think Dolander might be the one pick next year. But regardless, you know, Tidwell today, sophomore. So, you have two sophomores, two freshmen who anchor your pitching staff. Again, this is why, I mean, Tennessee wasn't picked to win the SEC. They were picked to be a good team, but – because their lineup, the pitching was a big question. It's been incredible. But that's a fair point. I mean, look, that's where, like, Vanderbilt in 2019, Kamar Rocker, as a freshman, you know, he was absolutely incredible, that Duke game and everything. So, I mean, that's the type of stuff you need. Their bullpen, I mean, again, they have everything. Like, they don't have any apparent weaknesses, but it's also a little bit of like, ooh, you know, because it's just weird stuff happens, you know. I think especially in baseball, weird stuff happens. So how do you handle weird stuff? Something's going to happen. You're going to have some bad luck somewhere. Someone's going to make a weird – you're going to have a weird, you know, pop fly that drops in. You're going to have an error, whatever. You know, how do you handle that? I mean, I think they're built for it, you know. But – It is like this tournament in particular, not just the one seed, but it's almost like 50% that the seeded teams don't make Omaha.
Yeah.
It's actually like a higher rate of upset and surprise than like the basketball tournaments.
Yeah.
It's baseball.
Weird things can happen sometimes. And all it takes is a couple of weird things and you're sitting at home. So we'll see what happens on that front beginning today. We'll have more on regional play beginning in the NCAA baseball tournament later in the show. You can catch the NBA Finals on 102.5, 106.3 The Game as the Golden State Warriors take on the Boston Celtics for the championship. Tip-off for Game 2 is coming up on Sunday night at 7 p.m. NBA Finals coverage powered by FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Josh Malone, Titans wide receiver, former Tennessee Vol as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning. We are scheduled to be joined shortly by Josh Malone, Titans wide receiver, former Vols wide receiver. I mean, I can keep going back, former station camp wide receiver, too. A lot of familiarity with Josh Malone around here.
VFL?
Yep, well, VFL.
SC for L? SCFL? SCFL.
Station camp for life?
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Thank you.
Bison? Bison for life?
BFL. BFL and VFL. There he is.
Good stuff. Looking forward to this conversation. Looking forward to seeing what he can do. I mean, made a great catch the other day. Good throw by Tannehill. The Titans put the video out, so looking forward to seeing what Josh Malone can do in camp here as he continues to move forward here. So looking forward to that. And, I mean, it's one of those things, too, where it's got to be good for him coming back in and as a local guy to be back in this area. So let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Titans wide receiver Josh Malone. Josh, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Not much. How you doing this morning?
We're doing great. Good. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Josh, what's it been like for you coming back to this area here in Middle Tennessee, where obviously you're very familiar with it, and being with the Titans organization? What's that been like for you?
It's been a good transition. I'm coming back home. It's a blessing also just to be close to the family again and be able to see family and also just going to work every day and, you know, just scrap and get better day in and day out.
Just from a football perspective, Josh, why was Tennessee, why were the Titans the right fit for you?
I feel like a lot of things team-wise, I can help complement and help stretch the field. But at the end of the day, like, I'm just trying to find a role and just carve out a role and just keep getting better and better and just keep adding more to the plate day in and day out.
So, Josh, what's it been like for you so far with OTAs, with, you know, Tannehill in there and getting some work in this offense? What have you learned so far about this group and this system here with the Titans?
Well, I learned with the group, it's a very hard-working group, very invested, very committed. It's just about the details and execution, and then just getting rest with the guys is always good just to build the team chemistry, especially during this time of the year, because it's going to translate into the season.
So, speaking of that chemistry, Josh, obviously, you as with any, you know, receiver room, you got veterans, you got young guys. You're still a young guy, but you've been in the league for a few years now. What's it been like linking up with Robert Woods, who obviously, you know, has been a leader and a really good player for a lot of years in this league? And then, are you also, you know, are you helping some of the young guys come along? Like, obviously, a lot of attention on a Traylon Burks, you got Kyle Phillips out there too. Like, what's your role in that, and what's your view of this receiver room?
So having Woods in the room, while Woods in the room is a blessing, especially with his experience, also with him being the Super Bowl champion, also with just the amount of football he's played. So he's seen a lot. So it's like great to get a chance to pick his mind and just continue to learn, because you can learn something new every day. And that's just really in life. And then I feel like my role in the room, like the young guys, is just, I've been around the league, been with different teams. I feel like just to show them, you know, just try to help them make the transition into being more like pros, and just like, just give them advice, because the transition is not easy. And just whatever I can do to help and make it easy for them and to help them get more comfortable and more adjusted. That's how I see my role.
Titans wide receiver Josh Malone on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Josh, what's it been like to this point working with Ryan Tannehill? We saw a nice connection between you and him the other day in the OTA practice. What's it been like just working with Tannehill so far?
Oh, it's been good. He's a great teammate. He's always there to help. He's always there to have questions. He's always there. You know, it's easy to communicate with on the field, and that's always good from a wide receiver and quarterback standpoint. You know what he wants to see, and he knows what like he likes things a certain way. We all like things a certain way. So it's just the communication standpoint has been very good. And as a overall, we've just been communicating very well on and off the field.
And then, of course, you got Malik Willis out there too. I mean, one thing from standing from the sideline, Josh, I can definitely tell the velocity on a Malik Willis pass. I mean, he has some serious heat on that. What have you seen from him so far? And is there like a difference, you know, just catching a significant difference between those two and in particular catching passes from one to the other?
Malik definitely has arm strength. He definitely has grip on the ball. And Ryan, you know, he's been around a lot longer, so it's more the understanding of just getting the ball to the plate. Man, it is more about the strength, but it's been a pleasure working with both those guys, and it's going to be fun watching the league develop over the years. So,
Josh Malone on with us here on Robbie and Rexro. So, Josh, take us back to your time with Tennessee. As you think about your time with the Vols, what kind of stands out to you? What were some of your fondest memories playing college football at Tennessee?
Outside of like playing with my teammates and cherishing those moments like with them guys over the years, I learned so much from like leaders like AJ, Kurt, Cam, Reese, Mason, and Dodge. Probably like one of my favorite memories, probably like the Florida game, the Georgia game with the Hail Mary. Really, that last year was like a lot of great memories on campus and just on the field with those guys. And it's nothing like playing in Neyland. It's nothing like playing in front of Big Orange and just playing in front of just – it's just an amazing experience just to play in Neyland. It's hard to explain.
So were you bought in on what you're seeing from Josh Heupel? I'm sure as a receiver you're looking at this offense and saying, man, that looks fun. But right? But what do you think about that first year and where things are going for Heupel?
I think everything's on the up and up. It takes time to build a program, and I feel like he's putting in the right culture, getting the right individuals in to build a program that he sees fit for fantasy football. And I know just from personal conversations and just from meeting him that he's really bought into building a culture and building fantasy football as a winning program, as it should be. So I'm excited to see the product they put on the field, especially with the new talent. I'm just looking forward to it. I just want to keep seeing them take steps and just keep building and keep taking the steps.
Well, Josh, you mentioned that nothing like playing at Neyland Stadium. Can you kind of explain the Florida game that you're referencing was unbelievable. Can you kind of explain what it's like when that place is rocking?
What it's really like when that place is, like, rocking is you can literally be standing right next to somebody in their ear yelling at the top of your lungs and you won't hear nothing. And they won't hear nothing. And you won't even hear yourself trying to talk. And it's just – it's a beautiful experience. Be able to experience running through the Chiefs, playing in front of all those fans, all 102, 455, is a blessing. And it's a unique experience because there's not many stadiums that can compare to Neyland.
So, Josh, are you into this baseball team? I'm trying to find a Tennessee fan who isn't all in on this baseball team. Like, are you setting time aside today to watch this baseball team in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, definitely. This baseball team is explosive. They got pop off the bat, and they just playing well. They're playing at a high level. It's a fun team to watch, and I know all of our nations behind this team, and we're excited to see them go ahead and handle business in the tournament.
Josh, last thing for you here. As you move through with the Titans here, what's the number one thing that you're working on, looking to prove as camp comes up here in the next few weeks?
I just want to keep proving that I can consistently make plays and handle my assignments. And it's like I said before earlier, I just want to carve out my role and just keep building off my role and keep adding to my plate. And personally, I'm just taking a day at a time, one play at a time, 1 minute at a time, and just handling business that way, not looking too far ahead and not really dwelling on the past.
Well, Josh, we really appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Good luck as you move forward here, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Josh Malone, Titans wide receiver, former Vols wide receiver, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrode. It's interesting, like, you know, watching him play at Tennessee, you know, he made some explosive plays, and I thought to myself, yeah, I mean, he could absolutely play in the NFL. So I'm interested to see if he can carve out a role for himself on this team come training camp. I mean, you're looking at the receiver room, and we'll get to some of that here in just a few minutes, but I do think there's opportunity there for a guy like Josh Malone to maybe find himself on this roster come first game of the season. Now, he's going to have to, you know, obviously some work's going to have to be involved, and he's going to have to make some plays in the preseason, but I think that opportunity is there if he can seize it.
Yeah, no, he looks good out there. I mean, he was a good player at Tennessee, no question. Fourth round pick of the Bengals in 17, you know, a couple years there, and he's bounced around. He's with the Jets, and, you know, really, I was going to say in the bad era of the Jets, but I guess when's the last good era? I don't know. But he was with the Jets for some rough times. He was, you know, the Jets released him right before camp last year, so they obviously improved their receiving core, Corey Davis among those improvements, and then he kind of bounced around practice squad with the Broncos, practice squad with the Packers. So he's kind of, you know, it's like the journeyman route here, trying to find a fit. But I think this is a good, beyond being home, I think this is a good choice, a good possibility for him with the Titans. I mean, there's opportunity for sure, at the back end of that receiver room, and the Titans could use another situation where they have guys pushing that maybe you didn't expect. And when training camp comes, last year Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers were all the talk, you know, while Josh Reynolds was kind of hurt and Julio Jones barely participated. And this year, you know, Des Fitzpatrick, Racy McMath, those guys, I mean, that's the competition. I guess Mason Kinsey, Cody Hollister, I mean, Jared's starter, wide receiver one, Cody Hollister.
Too, yeah.
But there's opportunity for sure, and he runs well. There's no doubt about that.
So what is this Titans wide receiver room going to look like come opening day against the Giants? We'll dive into that next. Welcome your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 5:35 on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds take on the Durham Bulls, the AAA affiliate of the Tampa Bay Rays. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by 312 Pizza, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Spirited High. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll have TD coming up at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that conversation with him. So, Joe, what do you make of this wide receiver room? We spent so much time talking about Treylon Burks and obviously Robert Woods coming off the ACL injury. We know that those two guys are going to be on the team. We know that Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is going to be on the team. Really, beyond that, it's interesting in this room because, I mean, I feel good about Kyle Phillips making the team. Fifth-round pick. We'll see what he can do in the slot. But I think the three guys that I just know are going to be on the team, Burks, Woods, and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. Is there anybody else that you feel just great about they're going to absolutely be on this team in this wide receiver room?
I would pick Kyle Phillips. I don't, but I wouldn't put him in the same category.
Yeah,
you know, you got to go prove it in camp. And it's not like where you were drafted that you know, like, that gives you any sort of protection, you know. So I would pick him as a fourth, I think, but we'll see. And then how big is the room going to be? How many receivers are they going to keep? You know, if it's six, then you've got Des Fitzpatrick. To me, the top contenders would be Des Fitzpatrick. I'll put Racy McMath in there. I think I would put Fitzpatrick ahead of him. Again, it's kind of like with McMath, it goes back to how valuable is he viewed in the kicking game? How indispensable, if at all, is he considered by the Titans coaches in the kicking game? That changes things if they feel like they really need to have him. I just don't know if that's the case. But Fitzpatrick, McMath, I do think that you have to put Josh Malone in there now. I think that's an interesting pickup that could be good for them. But also Roberson, whose name, you have to – Reggie Roberson. You got to – it's not Roberson. It's Roberson. You notice him out there for sure. So Roberson and Malone could kind of be Rodgers and Marcus Johnson of last year. Now, those guys actually had done more in the NFL, but they also had injury stuff. So
yeah.
Can these guys – and I don't know, with Josh Malone, all that has gone into bouncing around – but I don't know of any serious injuries. So, health, availability, huge part of it. I'd put those guys in there. And then, look, like Mason Kinsey is there. He's going to be getting reps. He's a very good practice player. I think he's still eligible for the practice squad next year. So I could see him there. And Cody Hollister is going to be out there too in the mix. Battling, I would put those guys down the pecking order. I'd put them in the same group with Roberson and Malone. Guys trying to fight in there and take again. I think 5 and 6 are open though. I don't give Dez Fitzpatrick 5. I don't give McMath 5 or 6. I think that's open, and all those guys are going to battle.
Well, I mean, the reason I bring this up, number one, I think it's going to be interesting to see how many receivers they keep. Number two, I mean, remember the conversation we were having last year in training camp for the Titans of, wow, this is the deepest wide receiver room they've ever had. They've got AJ and Julio, and we went down the list of Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers and all these guys, and you just felt like that was a position of, I mean, Cam Batson, I mean, you can go down the list of guys they had last year that you at least felt okay about. I don't know this year, man. Like, I don't know if I feel really good about this wide receiver room. And we hadn't even got to, who in the world's returning kicks and punts for this team right now? Like, that's going to be part of this conversation too, I would expect. But I think the depth of this room concerns me as they head into this season.
Yeah, well, I agree. I mean, it's because, again, Johnson Rogers had done more in the league. And, yeah, Cam Batson, by the way, off the ACL, signed with Atlanta. So Titans, Southeast continues in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And, hey, it's good for him. I mean, I'm not surprised Arthur Smith. Some of these guys, I'm like, man, you really liked everybody on the Titans, huh? But but Cam Batson, immediately improves your locker room. Guys, unbelievable. On the punt return thing, I think that's where I believe it'll be Kyle Phillips.
Could be.
And I think that's another thing that strengthens his – now, if somebody else is better than – okay, now you've weakened his chance, but I think he's a pretty strong guess as the fourth receiver. But yeah, that's the thing. All those other guys fighting for 5 and possibly 6, how good are they? I mean, Dez Fitzpatrick, I still think could be a pretty good NFL receiver, and I've seen some things out there that he's made some plays, but it's kind of hard to know still. It's not like he's commanding all these reps, and then you get into mini camp will tell a little bit more with some of that. But yeah, it's not. Look, if you're good with your top four and you can count on them being healthy, then you're fine.
Well, honestly, I think a big part of the reason beyond what we just went through with the back half of the room of why this receiving core concerns me heading into the year, like, we don't even know if the Titans have a number two wide receiver. We have no idea what Treylon Burks is going to be. And I was listening to Jared versus Joe yesterday. I mean,
terrible judging.
There was that. But I think it's totally clear that Treylon Burks has got to be productive for this team, because if he's not, I just look around the rest of that room, I have no clue where it's going to come from. I mean, Robert Woods, I mean, you could make an argument. Like, Robert Woods, I think, is going to be this team's number one wide receiver. Is he a number one wide receiver? I think he's probably a pretty good number two. I don't know if he's number one. Titans didn't bring him in to be number one either.
No. Long term, this is set up for Treylon Burks,
sure,
to be, if you want to label him, Treylon Burks to be your lead receiver and Robert
but
Woods.
But he's not going to be the start. At least I don't think so.
Oh, I don't think so either. That's part of the tough spot he's been put in. Tough spot you're just put in when you trade A.J. Brown. And then not to mention the stuff with Burks, not knowing exactly how ready he'll be and everything. So, yeah, it's not great. But if Burks can at least be on the field and produce and be ready right away, then I think you can be okay. Westbrook-Akina is a good three. Right now he's NWI is WR1 with Burks trying to figure it out and with Woods still, you know, I think Woods is going to be probably cleared, you know, to do everything in training camp. Don't know if he'll actually do everything. But right now, Westbrook-Akina, wide receiver one. He needs to be wide receiver three. If Phillips is good and can come right in as a rookie and produce and figure it all out, then you can be fine. But, like, to your point, if the rookies aren't ready, I guess it's like Woods being healthy right now is a big deal because if that were a problem too, then I think you'd really have to look. And I'm still not against looking for a possible veteran to go in there. But which of all these guys we've talked about could step up and actually produce in games on Sundays?
I don't know.
Josh Malone hasn't been on the field a ton since his rookie year. He played, you know, some his rookie year with Cincy. He hasn't been really seen the field a lot. I mean, we've seen Fitzpatrick in an absolute pinch. He caught a TD pass.
He did.
He made some mistakes.
Racing McMath, I was told, was kind of like Julio Jones.
I mean, hey.
Former Titans wide receiver may have said that.
He did. He did. Parting gift from A.J. Brown. I mean, I don't know. I don't see where he's making huge strides. But I could be missing it. I don't see it. Mini camp will tell more. Training camp much more than that. Yeah, it's a little bit slim pickings. I like Roberson. I do. I think Roberson and Malone both have looked good out there, and it's possible that a guy like that could step up in a pinch. But you'd probably want it to be just in a pinch. I mean, you need those top four to be available and good.
Viking Matt on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, Titans need to look at D.D. Westbrook. He tried out for the Vikings. They went to sign him, and he turned him down. Wide receiver and returner. This is coming from Viking Matt. There is that. Apparently, D.D. Westbrook just said, yeah, thanks. No thanks. I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know about D.D. Westbrook.
Yeah. What did he have last year? Did he play? He had 10 catches.
Yeah, not trending. Not trending the right way.
He had 10 catches in 15 games. It's not good.
By the way, these are not my words. These are Maddie's words in the text line.
Okay.
Rex, you got hosed yesterday against Jared. This is not nice. He's a doofus. Again, I'm not saying this. This is Maddie. That only wins arguments by elevating his Kermit-esque voice and increasing his verbal speed to Micro Machine Guy. I don't know who Micro Machine Guy is, but I like the Kermit-esque voice.
That's good.
You get that reference, Michelle?
Yeah, Kermit the Frog.
Boom.
Yeah.
We just got to have a Jared versus Joe. You need home court. Right? So that's like you're away. You need some home court.
Already lost.
So. Yeah. Robbie screwed me over trying to like not show favoritism. It's a bunch of BS, man. Don't get me mad on a Friday.
That's what it was.
Yeah, how did he even win? I don't remember what we said that day, but come on. Ooh, I like this. Anthony the Plumber says it should be judged by the listeners and not Jared's co-host, LOL.
Well, yeah, but who would win that every time?
I don't know.
You would.
Well, I don't know this.
Just like it'd be very unbiased if the callers called in.
Well, what? Okay. Well, what is that? So then why would they be wrong?
I didn't say they would be.
I mean, what? We're just going to dismiss what the listeners think?
No.
We don't care what the listeners think here. That's what we learned today on Robbie and Rex Road.
Holy show down. Don't give a crap what any of you say.
Caroline's the arbiter of all things in sports. I'm just kidding. I love you, Caroline.
And we do love
what
you
say.
And
my daughter, Caroline.
And we love the text line. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 1025, 1063, the game.
The The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joe Rexroad, I turn things over to you.
It would ruin my whole world.
Man.
Nailed that.
I forgot that whisper part. Please don't go, girl. I mean, come on. NCOP B.
This was Joe's sixth grade breakup song.
I wish I was that
young. I was about to say, what are we talking about here?
I was in high school. Again, this brings back great memories of making fun of my little sister. She was such an NCOP B stan. But yeah. Please don't go, girl. That's like little Joey. NCOP B had, you know, they had Marky Mark's older brother. Is it Don Wahlberg, right? Donnie Wahlberg, who I swear was
Donnie.
Like, yeah, I swear he was like a 33-year-old dude in a boy band. Like, hey, come on, guys, I can buy you a beer. And then, you know, he had little Joey. God, he was so annoying. But, yeah, again, you compare that to, like, why don't we go in the wrong direction or whatever band you love. I mean, it is an
improvement. So when did that song come out? Like, 90?
Yeah, no, I'd say a little earlier. I would say, like, maybe even like 88, something like that. Maybe 80, 89, probably right in that range.
Okay.
It was definitely before 90. I would say.
If only they're a machine that could.
Please don't go, girl. That's right. Yeah. Let's. I'm gonna guess. Please don't go, girl. I'm gonna guess 1989.
88.
Ooh. Okay. All right. There you go. So, brought out the 80s with a bang. All right. And less fun topics. Let's go to my rant today. Because I'm not going to stop talking about this stuff, so we may as well just get through this. Let's review what has gone on since Uvalde, okay? A lot of the same crap. It's Democrats and Republicans yelling at each other. It's not what we need. So if this is a means to an end for you politically, I don't want to hear it. I'm talking to Democrats, okay? I don't care what this means about, like, Republicans or Democrats or any other issue that they talk about. I don't care. Sensible path, sensible changes, do the math, make slaughters of children and other innocent people more difficult to execute, while fully acknowledging this is, of course, not just about guns. We can all agree on that. But the definition of a mass shooting is when four or more people, not including the shooter, are injured or killed. I don't know who came up with that, but that's the definition. There have been at least four a week in the United States this year. There have been 232 as of Wednesday when a man killed at least four people in a hospital in Tulsa. Now, go down the list of every other developed country in the world, all of which have way stronger gun laws than we do, and it's right around zero. So, is this a complex issue? Yes, of course. Also, more math. Let's do the polls. The Pew Research Center, they have a lot of results and a lot of polling, and it's very strong. Very strong support from Americans in both political parties for increased mental health restrictions for buying guns. That's nearly 90%. Stronger background checks, that's more than 80% in favor. Opposition to concealed carry without a permit, that's almost 80%. Again, both parties. Now, the ban on assault weapons, that's, you know, that's 63%. It's like 83 from Dems. It's less than 40 from Republicans. That's a hot button issue. I understand that. I don't know why people take that to you're infringing on the Second Amendment, but that's where the kind of the rubber meets the road. We're not going to get everything right. We're not going to agree on all of it, but let's just do math. Do math and try to make it harder for slaughters to happen. And I hope that we can all agree that if a particular politician is touting door control and saying we should construct buildings with one door to contain a shooter, which of course would bring all kinds of other problems, is one of the dumbest things I've ever freaking heard in my life. That person is probably compromised. And there's a lot of math to show that too. So let's just keep talking about it. That's all I've got.
There you go. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. It is one of those things, like, you know, I literally just looked at Twitter for the first time in like 10 minutes.
Okay.
And the first tweet is about a shooting that has taken place.
Another
first
one today?
I don't know. This one is about, this was from 10:34 p.m. last night. Two people and a shooter died Thursday night in a shooting outside a church in Iowa.
In Iowa now?
Yeah.
That was three. It's... It's out of hand. I mean, the whole Uvalde situation in a lot of ways is it's wild, but I don't know. Again, let's all agree, complex, lots of things. It's not, and again, I get mad at people who, strong on the left who are just like, guns. It's not just that. Like, it's a mess, okay? But, like, what can we do? What can we do in the short term? There are things, actually, that can be done.
Yeah, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Hopefully, at some point, we can get to a place where we're not talking about this all the time. But it's been, man, these last few weeks, brutal.
Yeah.
Just brutal.
Peter,
I say last few weeks, I mean, it's been like this for a while.
It has, but it's just, it feels like it's escalating, and it's like almost, I don't know, like is it like copycatting? Is just everybody so mad it's just boiling over everywhere? I don't know, but it's incredible. And again, we don't, like, that's 232 or whatever it is. I mean, it takes something like this to even really get coverage. You know what I mean? I mean, most of them aren't even really talked about.
Like there's been so many, it's hard to keep track. Like, it's hard for me to remember.
Right. So,
Tyler on the text line says, incredibly well said. Couldn't agree more, Joe. It's coming from Tyler on the text line.
Thank you, Tyler. If you want to yell at me, you're also welcome to yell at me on the text line. here we go. Tell Joe to stay out of politics. I don't switch his radio station. Hear this crap, says Tim. See you again, Tim.
How does this immediately go to politics?
Like, well, it's unbelievable. But it does, and that's where it sucks. Like, it again, like,
it's like you talk about anything. Oh, politics. Stay out of politics.
Right.
Like, what about anything you just said was political? This is stupid.
Right. I mean, it does go there. It always goes there. Nothing can avoid it. It gets funneled there immediately. I'm talking about slaughtering of children, Tim. But yeah, you're right. I mean, politics has to be involved in the solution. I will agree with you that. And Tyler also says, that rant was short, had me saying, please don't go Joe. Ooh, thank you, Tyler. Tyler's got me. Wow. Tyler's got my back. Please, where do we go from Joe there? You want to talk about some sports the rest of the segment?
We can. I don't know where to go from there. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. They keep throwing up just shots of Al Horford shooting threes on Get Up and on ESPN, and I'm just mesmerized by it. What do you go? What was his final tally? 6 of 8 from three last night?
I think that's right. 26 points. Just his pigeon-toed, spread-legged, two-handed, like, shot put.
I got to say, like,
pure.
I'm not surprised that the Celtics won last night. The fact that Al Horford was the guy that answered the bell. That's kind of shocking to me, especially from three.
Well, if they're going to go 15 for 23 between him, Derek White, and Marcus Smart, then the Celtics will win in four. Because Jason Tatum is not going to have a game that bad.
I don't think so. I mean, that was pretty clearly the plan from the Warriors, was to slow him down, and then Horford, Brown, Smart hit a big three. I mean, they shot the ball really well last night. So they're up 1-0, game two coming up. Is that true? Like, I didn't even look and see when game two was. Is it true it's on Sunday?
Yes, it's on
Sunday. Why are we going from Thursday to Sunday?
The NBA is always with the finals. They've been huge on Sunday night being one of the anchored games of the finals no matter what. They've bounced the other days around, but Sunday has always been an NBA finals. That's obviously, I don't know, they don't want those games to be on weekend nights.
I guess.
I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure there's reasoning no there.
They're there already. Just play.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, I know. Well, at least they went back to 2-2-1. So,
yeah, there is
or
that.
2-2-1-1-1, which is better. The Real 2-3-2. Quick.
2-3-2.
Yeah, didn't like 2-3-2. Rebecca says saving kids is not political. You're right, Rebecca. Also, that was two different Tylers. So I actually have two Tylers supporting me on the text line. Double Tyler support.
You're a friend of the Tylers.
Yeah, friend of the Tylers. Not of the Tims.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. We'll get his thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.